I'm Kiara.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Carter.
And we just three black folks who love true crime. This is the I Ain't a Killer podcast.
Hey, Killer Bees.
Hello.
What's up?
Come to you live from
Atlanta, Joe.
No, we on TV now.
You're famous. Talk to us nice.
Not too much, y'all.
Just kidding.
I love making the pressure too much.
No, I haven't watched it. But I'll tell Erin we should have a watch party at any spot.
Well, we should explain what it is for folks that aren't Instagram or Facebook.
Okay, so on Tubi Network, Carter, Eliwa, and I are each individually featured in a docuseries episode. The docuseries is called Murder in Paradise, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three episodes. I don't know if they're going to do any more.
Well, y'all's is Murder in Paradise. Mine is the Heather Mack story.
Okay.
But they're all in the same season or whatever. So, yeah. So I think my episode's first, Carter's is second, and then Ellie Wass is third. And we really in there, y'all. I watched my episode last night.
No, we really in there. You thought they were playing.
No, for real. I thought it was going to be like a little blackout and there's going to have like a little voice scramble.
Something.
I was like, no, they got my voice on there. That's crazy.
But we shot this about, Carter and I did ours like almost exactly a year ago, right?
Yeah. It was
April?
June?
Was it June?
Well, they were emailing us back about it in June. That was the last update we got. So yeah, it was March or April.
Yeah. And then Eliwa was like a month or two after.
Yeah. It's like last summer.
Yeah. So it's been a little minute. I low-key forgot we did it.
Same.
And then they randomly emailed us about Eliwa's episode, which is what we announced on our socials.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple days after that, they were like, psych, all y'all.
We're like, no, I'm terrified.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either.
Yeah, I feel like I have to be with y'all to watch it, or I have to be with people, because like everybody, when I posted on my page, like my cousin hit me up and was like, oh yeah, we're gonna support, we're gonna let you know how you did. I was like,
yeah, my
boy's
like,
please don't watch it.
So tell me about what's happening with the podcast. I was like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? You're not supposed to watch that.
What are you talking about?
Oh, terrifying.
You are supposed to listen to us, but you're not supposed to perceive us.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Just forget about me as soon as the episode ends.
What y'all doing after the episode?
I mean, I just got a little work to do, but we can do
that. Multitask.
Yeah,
multitask.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, we can watch them. Let's not watch mine.
We can watch mine.
It doesn't matter. They're like all an hour long.
Oh my God, I'm so cute.
But yeah, so we say all that to say, go check it out. Let us know what you think. We were excited to do it. It was a new experience for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
We might be doing something similar in the future. We don't know, but pretty cool.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Y'all can...
We have anxiety, but we like to do things.
Yeah. I'm so nervous. I don't tell people about this, let alone
right.
The show. But yeah, so y'all can see what we look like if you don't already know.
I just really... My biggest fear is that I accidentally like smile while I'm talking about crime. Like
Someone did that in my episode. They were talking about the murder part and they were smiling and I was like, oh.
it's just a reflex. I don't want nobody to think I love murder. Like, I get off on it. I'm like, no. It's just fascinating to look at why people do things.
But I don't know. I think it's just like the reputation of Tubi. I guess I didn't take it seriously, but it's like a real ass thing. There's like a narrator throughout. Like they show little clips of us and then we are like the narrators for a little bit. Like it's serious.
Not legit.
Yeah, ooh. It's real.
Keep my radio voice on.
They got B-roll and stuff. In my episode, they had a family member of the person who died. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. It's real. So it's exciting, but let us know what y'all think. I'll put the link to the episodes in the description as well, so y'all can have easy access.
Okay, cool.
Well, this story is not going to make the nerves even better, so let's just go ahead and get ready.
Amazing.
So this is the story of the murder of Jace Dwayne Ricardo Onfroy, aka XXXTentacion.
Oh,
that's his full name.
Wait. What?
Yeah. I was so
the rapper?
Yeah, the rapper.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
His name, that's his full name.
Okay, yeah. One more time.
Jace Dwayne Ricardo Onfroy.
I never knew that. I also did not know how to pronounce his stage name, so I just called him That Little Boy X.
That Little Boy X. Honestly, that's very, like, peak millennial. Okay, side note, this is real quick. There's this thing called peak millennial. Everybody born in 1990 and 1991. Uh-huh. I was, like, the biggest cohort of millennials.
I knew we were the best.
I know we were the best. I know we were pioneers of student debt. Right. So before that, we're the first generation to surpass in student loan debt and instead of credit card debt. And we also the first one, because immigration peaked that year, and baby boomers having kids peaked that year. So,
wow,
yeah, we set it off for y'all. You know, we took the first, you know, hit. We took one for the team. Respect.
Still taking it to this day.
But yeah, anyway, back to the story. So yes, this trigger warnings for this story. It might be a little long because I have a lot of notes. Normally my pages run from like 8 to 9, and I have like 13 pages. If it runs a little long, everybody start yawning a little bit. We take a little break, but
a lock in.
It may also be because some of the stuff is just like random bullet points and like not full paragraphs. So, yeah, trigger warnings for this episode: mentions of child abuse, mentions of sexual assault, rape, torture, anti-queer violence, mentions of extreme violence, domestic violence, and mentions of suicide. And also, if anything kind of grisly pops up, I'll try to put in like a little trigger warning before I say it. All right, so Jase Freud was born January 23rd, 1998, which makes him an Aquarius. And I hate that because I love Aquarius. But yeah,
love Aquarius.
I do. My brother's an Aquarius. Oh, okay. Fire and water. We cancel each other out a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I'm gonna let you have it. I love you.
So he was known professionally as XXXTentacion. He was born in Plantation, Florida, to Jamaican parents. His parents are Dwayne Ricardo Onfroy and Cleopatra Aretha Drina Bernard.
Ooh, that's a name right there.
Yeah. I also did not know he was Jamaican.
Me either. I'm sorry. I found out so much about him, and I already kind of had mixed feelings about his story anyway, but I definitely, those were affirmed by listening to the story now. So his father named him after the Bob Marley song, So Jase. Also, please, if y'all are Jamaican, please give me grace. I'm
Colin Kid Fury.
I'm straight Black American. Like, I don't know nothing about my patois. I'm trying my best. So, and it interpolates the scripture Ezekiel 34. His dad and his grandfather were Rastafarians, and so he grew up in like a lot of that culture. He was born with what's called a ventricular septal defect, which is commonly known as having a hole in his heart, so a heart murmur. Mm-hmm. So due to his condition, he never grew taller than 5'6". And I also didn't know that a heart murmur could make you
short.
Yeah, short or stunt your growth. So that was something else that I learned. He stated that he also had Syrian, Indian, and possibly Italian ancestry in an interview, which isn't far-fetched because after slavery was abolished in the islands, they brought in like a lot of Asian folks to like work the fields and stuff in plantations. So he was mainly raised by his grandmother, Colette Jones, in Papano Beach in Florida, in Lauderdale, Florida. When he was 6 years old, allegedly, he tried to stab a man for attempting to attack his mom.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, and that's what I said. I have like a lot of mixed feelings about his story because like he, like from early on, it seems like he's just very like fiercely loyal.
Yeah.
And I think that sensitive children get a bad rap because what they're exposed to ends up shaping their personality later.
Yeah.
He was eventually put into a youth program before going to live with his grandma. And I just don't think that's fair. Like, if that's why he was sent to the youth program, because of, you know, trying to defend somebody that you care about. I don't think that was fair for them to do that. Institutionalize him like that.
Right.
A source close to the family denies that the stabbing incident ever occurred. It couldn't be reported. It couldn't be confirmed by police reports since he was a minor. But domestic violence experts and psychology experts who look at the situation have stated that the story most likely happened. Like, it's very unlikely that he made that story up based off of like past issues with the trauma that he experienced.
Mm.
So when he was a kid, He discovered his uncle's dead body. Trigger warning. After his uncle committed suicide by hanging.
Ooh. Yikes.
Also, he said later on in an interview, when he was older, that he had been sexually abused by an unnamed adult when he was a child. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just based off of patterns, we know that that person was most likely a family friend or somebody mm-hmm. in your family.
Yeah.
Other traumatic events that he experienced, another trigger one because it's really gruesome. He witnessed as a child someone being physically tortured, and when he was a child, he witnessed someone being raped.
Whoa, he has had a lot of horrible experiences.
Sorry. Right, where did he grow up again?
Well, he was passed off to his, well, I don't want to say passed off, he ended up having to be raised by his grandmother, but earlier it alluded that, like, because of his, like, abusive household, it was, like, back and forth. But according to his mom, his dad would, like, beat him a lot, which is probably why he ended up having to go stay with his grandmother anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She also claimed that his dad used to hit her in front of him, like, all the time.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Yeah. So in early 2008, when he was 10, his dad was locked up for 9 years in Arizona because he caught a RICO charge because of a sting operation. They released him, and then they deported him to Jamaica in 2016. In an interview, he said, they asked him about his relationship with his dad, and he asked, quote, "What's a father?" Like, as a joke, but obviously some very hard truths there. So he got into music because his auntie convinced him that he should be in the school choir, and then later he got into the church choir, and he ended up getting kicked out of the school choir for attacking another student for, quote, touching him. And then he also attended Margate Middle School. I'm not sure how to say that. And then he was expelled again for physical altercations. So this starts, like, I mean, not starts a pattern, but this is like a continuation of the pattern of getting into physical altercations with people.
Mm-hmm.
Around this time, he started listening to rap, new metal, hard rock, as he was, like, going to this church. And so that kind of, like, mixed his influences, and he ended up learning, teaching himself how to play piano and guitar. So then he transferred to Piper High School until he dropped out in the 10th grade.
It's wild to me that kids can drop out of high school.
Right.
I mean, like, I feel like, yes, people should be able to do what they want, and also, huh?
Yeah. Like, how are you allowed to just stop?
Going to high school, yeah. Like, grade school.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where, like, nobody's checking for black children unless they're on the street, like, loitering. Like, if you were to skip school or something like that, if you weren't, like, outside, nobody's checking, like, oh, let's call home, let's see if we can get them in an alternative. Like, nobody's doing that for black children. So I feel like you're not supposed to drop out until you're 16. I mean, I think that's, like, the legal age that you can drop out. And if he was in 10th grade, I mean, he was probably, like, 15 or 16, yeah. So maybe that was around the time where it was legal. But, yeah, anybody trying to force him to go back to school, he's a young black boy.
Yeah.
He described himself as a misfit, but he was described by his classmates as popular. And they also said that he was really, really quiet and that he would regularly get into physical altercations with people. Also, as a kid, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. He said that he was not the athletic type, and he also said that he was, like, super insecure about that, and it depressed him. Well, he was depressed in high school. So according to further, like, interviews that he ended up giving later on, he ended up serving juvenile detention for gun possession charges. And while he was locked up, he met a person named Stokely Goulburn, also known as Ski Mask the Slump God. I've never heard any of his music, but that does sound familiar.
That's all. The Slump God.
Ski Mask the Slump God. I've heard of him before, but I don't.
Yeah.
I can't name it all. If that made me corny, that made me, please. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Some people dispute that, like, they were already best friends before they met in jail, but obviously it doesn't matter because when they get out, they're best friends and they start hanging out, they start freestyling a lot. It gets to a point where they were supposed to be, like,
All right, y'all. We'll be right back after we pay some bills.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too. Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, aka the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fails, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watching.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on the big... Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On the big cunty couch. Mwah.
I guess, like, planning another crime. Just planning, like, rob somebody. But Ski Mask ended up... No, I think it was X that bought a snowball mic. Yeah, he bought a snowball mic and started recording music. And Ski Mask decided to do the same. So they met up on the, I guess, like, terms of, like, okay, yeah, we're about to go kick in somebody's door. And then it was like, nah, actually, we should make music.
And so, I mean,
I'm glad
the pivot is wild.
What's that movie with the light-skinned nigga that always says Maine?
Oh, Terrence Howard.
Hustle and Flow.
Hustle and Flow.
Basically.
What a bad trick.
I can't believe that movie's real.
Right? We should rewatch it.
So always saying Maine. That's a wild one.
And you knew that was exactly. We got there immediately.
So he adopted the name XXXTentacion because he adopted the name XXXTentacion. It means temptation in Spanish. He uploaded his first song that ended up not getting deleted because he does have some other stuff that was eventually deleted called Vice City. And that was like the beginning of his music career. He said he felt like music was a better outlet for his feelings. And his girlfriend at the time, who we talk about later, her name was Geneva. And she was like his main muse behind that. She was the one who helped him realize that music was the way for him to, like, you know, I guess, like, blow up or, like, change his life or whatever. So eventually Ski Mask and him are, like, best friends. They are managed by the same person. They, you know, performing together or, like, you know, doing small shows and, you know, collaborating together and stuff like that. They have a group called Very Rare, and he breaks off and makes his own group called Members Only Collective in 2015. And then Ski Mask also left, I guess, Very Rare to join the Members Only Collective. their manager was named Dylan Turner. He was also professionally known as Tables. I feel so bad saying it like this because, like, there's niggas out here who know this shit and it's right. Like, they just saying this shit. But I'm saying it like it's a fact. Like, Tables, Mr. Tables said that, you know, so, yeah, forgive me for my lack of knowledge. I'm sorry, I don't listen to the kids. So Dylan Turner, aka Tables, is a New Jersey native. He was studying at Full Sail University, which is music engineering school in Florida. They do, like, commercials and stuff all the time. You probably see them. So one night, Ski Mask, X, and Tables was at Tables' apartment. We're going to get y'all, y'all. Get together.
I'm trying to be serious. Eric is laughing.
Why are they being
mad?
Because they're boys. They're boys like they have their little names.
That's not like a cartoon or something.
Right.
It's
serious.
Own that up at a bar.
Side note, have y'all, like, it's so funny that niggas be making fun of non-binary people. It's like,
right.
But y'all be on the same.
I can't be called stop, but you call it table. Table. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
gender abolition for everyone. So all three of them were at Tables apartment, and I skipped over something. My bad. Okay, yeah, they were all in his apartment, and Ski Mask and Tables ended up getting into an argument. Ski Mask got so mad that he stormed out. So later on, while he was drunk, he called X and was like, "Oh, Tables stole like thousands of dollars from you." And so X was like fucking pissed.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. So according to Tables, days later, X ended up breaking into his apartment with a knife, and he had a few people with him. And he was like,
what if I stab you? What if I fucking stab you? And he was like, kept poking the knife at tables or whatever, but like, pulling it back right before it got to like his body or his stomach or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so Tables kept stepping back, but eventually the knife actually ended up plunging into his stomach. And X was like, oh fuck. And then they took off. So he ended up needing emergency surgery, and it said that he suffered life-changing injuries, which I think it ended up meaning that it pierced his intestine or some part of like some organ that will forever be like some sort of disabled. And he said that he would drop the charges if X would bring back the stuff that he took, which included one of his computers. He took his computer and he was like, okay, so if he gives it back, then I won't press charges. Like, that's really all I need. And he said that he, quote, didn't want one bad choice to define who X was.
Wow.
So
that's big of him.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said too. And so he kept his word, but when he got the computer back, all the files were deleted.
Now y'all.
And with him being a manager, I don't know if he was also a producer. But if I was a producer,
yeah,
and all of my files were deleted, all of my potential songs, yeah, I don't know if I would have kept my word. I just don't know.
Yeah. No, that's
So X paid for all of his hospital bills, and then he later apologized to him and he thanked him for dropping the charges, saying, thank you for dropping the charges. As fucked up as the situation is, I'm forever in your debt. When he was asked if he felt like X was being genuine, he said, yes, deep down. No, he said, if he was genuinely trying to change his life, Tables responded, yes, deep down we all are. So on July 14th, 2016, this happened days after he had stabbed Tables. X was arrested for robbery, assault, and deadly weapon because of a home invasion of someone else. This person named Che Thomas. According to the report, he ran into the home with three other people armed with a gun. And he pistol-whipped Thomas three times and then left the home with an iPad, an iPhone, and a PlayStation portable and $20.
That ain't shit.
That's not shit. And I was so mad. Like, when I saw the $20, I was like, that's so petty.
It
like,
is.
That has to be like some personal shit.
Right.
$20?
You went in someone's wallet.
A dub. Give right. me this. That's lunch money. What
that's
are you doing?
An iPad, a phone, and $20 in a PlayStation, a PSP.
Right.
A PSP.
You know what? I forgot that's what niggas used to call it. That's crazy.
Right.
Wow. No, that makes it even more petty.
Oh, Lord.
So he was arrested in Orlando, and he was later transferred to Orange County. They kept relocating him because they kept trying to find prosecutors. Oops, sorry. Give me 2 seconds. I just got a bullshit text message.
Okay, I'm gonna pause this.
Okay. So I'm not sure where I left off right before we paused, but I'm just gonna start back with the last thing that I think I said. So the relocations were due to the fact that they were trying to find prosecutors that would charge him as an adult for the crime that he committed when he was a kid. Because he was around like 16 or 17 when this happened. Like, he was very young. He was released on a $10,000 bail in September 2016. And following Che's request, they didn't give him prison time. So again, you have this person saying, like, I don't want this person to serve time. I know that they're like deep down a good person. They're just, you know, having this violent episode or whatever. And I personally think that people in his life knew like his ups and downs. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe they knew how it could get or how violent his episodes could get, but they also saw him at his, you know, I guess like midline, you know, like content, normal form or whatever. So he pled no contest to the charges and he ended up getting 6 years probation. So in 2014, just backtracking just a little bit, he met a woman named Geneva Ayala. I think I'm saying her name right. I hope I'm saying her name right. So he messaged her online because he was saying that he wanted to fight her boyfriend.
I'm sorry. Why am I in it? Talk to him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, talk to him. But he said he wanted to fight her boyfriend because her boyfriend had allegedly posted pictures of her in, like, underwear or nudes. It says scantily clad, but I don't know exactly what that means. I think that means like maybe she had like maybe she was half dressed or whatever, but it was without her consent. And the fight never happened, but they stayed in touch. So the boyfriend said that Ayala at one point, or Geneva, that she used to punch him, she used to slap him during breakdowns. And then he also admitted that sometimes when she would get like that, he would like slap her back and, you know, to make her like, quote, snap out of it. She was staying with him because her mom had kicked her out when she was 16. So she was very young.
I will never understand kicking your child out of your house.
No, I don't either.
It's so really wild to me. It's like they just don't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah,
it's a child. So first of all, whatever they're doing in your household, you want them to go do it to someone else,
right?
Second of all, that is still your child. Third, that is a child. Like, what?
More than likely, wherever they end up is going to be a terrible situation.
Yeah,
you're just like allowing them to do that,
and
or like ushering
support,
them,
right?
Yeah.
Like, as a minor with an underdeveloped frontal lobe, like, and zero resources or lived experience, you're just going to put them outside like a dog.
Yeah, when I was younger, we used to go through a lot of shit, and one of them was getting, like, kicked out whenever she would get mad. It never ended up turning into multiple days, but the whole time we would be out there, we'd be like, oh, my God, how are we going to fend for ourselves? You know?
Right.
And we out there, like, it's super OTP, too. And I remember going through it and thinking, like, not that this is normal. Like, this is obviously bad, but, like, this probably happens to, like, a lot of kids or something like that. I couldn't really fathom how young I was. I was, like, 12 or 13 at the time. And now I'm older and I'll be, like, hanging out with my nephew and I see how small a 12, 13-year-old, that shit really fucks with me because it's, like, what the fuck? We were babies. You think you so grown when you were a teenager or whatever.
My brother just turned 14. I was like, I was smoking and drinking when I was 14. I'm like, that is a fetus.
A
baby. What is he doing?
A little baby.
What was I doing?
Like, who was I grown up?
Right.
This is what I'm saying. Where are people in charge? You need to call authorities. So her getting kicked out at 16, I mean, still, she's a kid. Like, that's nowhere near a grown anything. So she stayed in touch with him. They ended up meeting at the movies one time, and he came up behind her and, like, I guess, like, in the crowd, like, grabbed her neck a little bit and then walked away silently. She also ended up going to one of his shows. I'm getting this mixed up. I don't know if this happened at the movies or if this happened at the concert, but that was like the thing that got them talking, like, that particular night. So after the concert, he came up to her, he hugged her or whatever, and was like, I want you to come live with me.
What?
Yeah.
Intense.
And he was like, I live in North Miami, like, you can come stay with me or whatever. And so that night she went home, she packed her shit, broke up with her boyfriend, and moved in with X.
Was he already rich by this time?
I'm thinking so. Either that or he was like that, like, beginner label rich, like, where they get you like that big ass Airbnb and whatever the fuck.
Yeah, they like set you up.
But given how much money he had at the time of his death, I think, he probably was rich because he blew the fuck up after that, like, a couple songs came out.
I don't know how old she was, but up until about 25, that would have convinced me to.
Yeah.
I would have been like, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I can't even judge it. 16? No. Like, absolutely not. My frontal lobe was ketchup. I would have that shit, and I cannot.
Ketchup is wild.
No, it was. That shit didn't fully. I remember my 30th birthday. It was like, bing. I was like, oh.
All of a sudden, your forehead.
I can make good decisions. Like, it was like a crystal gem.
Oh my God.
So she moves in with him. 2 weeks later, this is when the first physical altercation begins. And trigger warning for, like, the rest of the description of their relationship, because everything about this is just extremely violent. So 2 weeks later, he slapped her and broke her phone because she complimented a male friend on his new jewelry. So I guess she told him, like, I like your chain or whatever, fuck, and he slapped her. He later repaired the phone, and you'll notice throughout the story, like, he does that. Like, he does damage, and then he, you know, pays for everything afterwards.
Yeah.
Later that day, he left the room and he returned with two grilling utensils, a barbecue pitchfork, and a barbecue cleaner. And I read about this a long time ago, but it still chills my spine.
Because those barbecue cleaners are like little wire brushes, right?
Yes.
Oh, no.
He told her to pick between them because he was going to put one of them in her vagina. She chose the fork. He told her to undress. Then he likely dragged the tool against her inner thigh and she passed out. But he never penetrated her.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What? That is horrifying.
Absolutely terrifying. And her passing out is definitely understandable.
Because
I think I would have died.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness gracious.
So after this, like, the violence increased. Around July 2016, they moved to Orlando. And I'm sorry, hold on, let me see. Yeah, around 2016, they moved to Orlando. And according to a later interview, she said that when they lived in Orlando, it was literally like every day. Because they were asking her, okay, like, can you pinpoint the incidents? Can you tell us when he abused you? And she was like, it was every day. So there is no event. All the time. Johnson was Christian. But he also had an interest in the occult. So she would sometimes pretend to be possessed as a way to, like, scare him out of the abuse. But the occult fascinated him. So her being possessed fascinated him. So one day they were on the way to a show together. And they were listening to, like, one of his songs in the car, and she was, like, rapping along with his verse. And then she hummed along with the verse from whoever was on the song with him. He got real quiet, and he left her outside the venue.
How you mad about your girl singing your song?
This isn't the first time that I've heard this. I've heard that, like, niggas will get mad, like, if you, like, rapping somebody else's shit. So it's always like, oh, you like that nigga, like, that type shit. I've never been around men who act like that, and
that level of insecurity I can't even wrap my mind around
that. That is
a song.
Yeah,
that your song.
Who you put that nigga on your song? And you mad at her for singing the verse.
Wow.
And this is why I believe her, because the level of detail is just too much. Like, you can't write shit like that.
No.
Like, she definitely went through that. So he left her outside the venue. Inside the venue, they got into a fight. When they got home after the show, he took her into the bathroom and he was asking her why she was singing the song and if, you know, do you like him and do you be looking at his Twitter, like, doing all this stuff. So he then headbutted her, punched her, stomped on her, and put her in the bathtub. And then he continued hitting and kicking her. And she said, he wanted to cut my tongue out because I was singing the song.
Oh, wow.
So she tried to run away down the street. He tackled her, and that caused her head to hit the pavement. Because of that, she ended up with two black eyes. She ended up with a lump on the back of her head, scratch marks, bruises, and she had a huge bruise on her ankle where he stomped her. So also while they were living in Orlando, he would hit her with, like, the white plastic clothes hangers.
Mm-hmm.
She said that he broke a good 30 hangers on her legs. Around this time, he also tried cutting her hair, and he held her head under running water in the bathtub. Which I think is the same thing as waterboarding, but I'm gonna just leave that at that because I don't know exactly how they didn't actually just go into detail about how he did that. So this woman called her mom. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Let me say that again. She called her mom to pick her up and then went to go stay with a friend in Texas, but then shortly after getting there, she went back to Florida and went to go stay with X and his friends. Around this time, she ended up having sex with somebody else, which I don't know if they were together at the time, but even if they were, like, on some type of break, obviously because of the song situation and because it's so abusive, he's not going to respect that at all. So either way, it's, yeah. definitely already know that this is about to trigger like some huge event with them. So X got out of jail for another offense. Like, this was something else that had happened. I think this was the Che Thomas event when he ran up in the dude's house. So she told him that she had cheated on him. And he put a knife to her neck and, quote, strangled her a little bit and called her a hoe. So that night, he woke her up, told her to go outside, and he picked up an empty glass beer bottle and demanded that she tell the truth. He said, or I'm gonna fuck you up. And she replied that she was already telling him the truth, that she had already told him that she had cheated. And then he dropped the bottle, slapped her, and then let her go back to bed. So about a week later, they moved into another apartment in Sweetwater, Florida. Two major incidents happened there. X grabbed her neck, strangled her, and forced her down on the bed. And another person who lived there was the person who, like, had to come and, like, break it up. She recalled, quote, I'm like, she said this word for word, I'm scared, she said, recalling how she felt. It's like he's going to end up killing me or something. So now it's early October 2016. She found out that she was pregnant by X. And I'm surprised by this, but the pregnancy was planned by both of them. Yeah. So on the afternoon of October 6th, he told her to move from the bed, and he told her, no, he went out on the balcony where she could still hear him, and called up the person who she had slept with while he was in jail. And he was like telling the person, you need to tell me everything. When he came back inside, he told her, you need to tell me the truth right now or I'm gonna kill this jit. And she said jit was slang for the unborn child. But from what I've heard from Florida folks, I don't know if you're from Florida and you can, you know exactly what the context is, drop it in the, like, the comments or on the episode or in the discussion chat. But, like, I've heard that jit means, like, kid or, like, dude or something
So I've heard jit used to describe kid, but it would make sense to me that someone would refer to a fetus or an unborn baby as a jit.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So he started elbowing, headbutting, and punching her. He strangled her until she almost passed out. He took her to the bathroom and demanded one last time that she tell him everything or he would kill her in the bathtub. And she couldn't even recognize her face in the mirror. She said it looked distorted and that her left eye was completely shut and leaking blood. She had lost her vision and she ended up throwing up. So other people who lived in Sweetwater eventually came to the rescue, and she told him to just, like, let her go to the hospital. And he told her, like, you can't leave until your face is healed.
Wow.
Because if you do, then, like, the police will be called. So he told her that she had to wear a hoodie and that she had to wear glasses all the time. They got in a car and drove to an apartment that she had never been to before. And he left her in a bedroom and confiscated her phone. He didn't give it back for 2 days. So for the next 2 days, she didn't leave the room except for the bathroom that was next to the room. She couldn't find a way to get out because there was bars on the windows. He told her, quote, if you're smart, you would stay with me until you get a car and you have enough money to move in your own apartment. Because if you leave now, you're just setting yourself up for failure. You're going to be homeless. So around 2 a.m. on October 8th, X was in the living room of the apartment playing Minecraft, and he was on Skype with somebody. And she let him know that she was going to the kitchen to make him some food. She opened the fridge, but she opened it up wide enough so that he couldn't see, like, her. Like, she was crouched down in the fridge, like, looking for food or whatever. So while she opened the door, she ran out the door and ran to the nearest main street. She didn't have any money. She didn't have anything on her. She asked somebody if she could use their phone, and she called the only number that she knew by heart, which was her ex-boyfriend, who she had left. That his mom came to come get her. So now around this time, this is when Pitchfork comes out with this huge article. It has, like, transcripts of the depositions and, like, interviews and stuff like that, like when she was interviewed by the police and stuff like that. This is when, like, his allegations start to blow the fuck up, and this is when he like, okay, yeah, his music was like a thing, but this article was major. If you were around the time, like, reading Pitchfork, everybody was quoting Pitchfork, and they released, like, a lot of shit about this. So, yeah, they released the transcripts, and her ex-boyfriend backed her up. Her ex-boyfriend's mom backed her up, saying, like, her eyes were black and blue and purple, like, pretty much every color under the rainbow. That's what she said. Even this person who was a 23-year veteran of the police force was listening to her story and, like, all the stuff that, you know, about her choosing the barbecue tools and stuff like that. And he said he had never heard anything like that in his entire career. So on September 8th, 2017, they also leaked her testimony. And it ended up... Hold on, I'm sorry. I skipped another part. So he ends up getting arrested, and because they leaked her testimony, his trial ends up getting delayed. And during this time, I'm not sure if y'all remember, but his fans started attacking her. They found out, like, her name. They found out, like, what donut shop she was working at. It was, like, a donut shop or, like, a Baskin Robbins or something like that. And they harassed the fuck out of her.
That's terrible.
So, with these reports in the magazines, she starts to, like, come out and say, like, I don't want him to go to jail. She signed an affidavit saying that, like, I don't want him to serve any time or whatever. I'll recant my statement. I'm not going to show up
for court. And this was all, like, because she was being, like,
yeah, she was being harassed, like, bad. Like, his fans are, like, I don't know, like, teenagers.
Right.
Like, a lot of them are, like, these, I don't know, fucking weirdos who think this shit is normal or think this shit is, like, trolling and everything's just the internet, and it wasn't. And so, yeah. So when it comes time for his trial, they needed her testimony to get him on, like, the battery charges and domestic abuse charges, but she didn't show up. So on his Instagram, he posted, my court date is on the 15th. This is in December. My court date is on the 15th. Here's my court information. If I'm taken into custody, I want to tell y'all, I want to tell everybody I let down that I apologize. I really did try my best. But he ended up getting released on house arrest because she didn't show up. And so they couldn't get him on literally any other charges. Other than, I forget exactly what the charge was, but it was, like, something minimal that he could get released on house arrest for. So now it's New Year's Eve, 2017. He ends up in a relationship with this woman named Genesis Sanchez. They ended up living together, too. Around this time, he ends up becoming infatuated with this person who he met online named Jocelyn Flores. And if y'all know the song that he ended up blowing up for, Jocelyn Flores, she's the subject of the song. So he saw photographs of her on Twitter. He slides in her DM, says, I want you to model for, like, my clothing line. It's called Revenge. And he also had another girl staying with him at the time. While he was out at a party, he had a duffel bag, or, like, just a bag that had $7,000 cash in it. Somebody took it, but neither one of the girls would admit who took it. They both blamed each other. So he kicked both of them out, and he took back his offer to let Jocelyn model for him. So, trigger warning for this. The next day, she ended up checking into the Hampton Inn in Coconut Creek, and right before midnight, she checked into the hotel right before midnight, and her body was found dead in the room in the morning.
Wait.
Yeah, so the song is really sad. If you look up the song Jocelyn Flores, like, it's a very famous clip from this person named Shiloh, who was, like, this mysterious black and white figure who would post singing videos on Instagram. And it would be, like, he started the trend of kind of, like, having the corner of your mouth in the video, but, like, not necessarily your face. And then, like, the guitar would be in the video or whatever. And nobody knew who this person was, but they knew that they loved the voice or whatever. So he was sampled in the song, and that's why it was, like, such a huge deal. It's, like, this secret person, and, like, Jocelyn Flores had actually passed and stuff like that. And it really affected X, like, really badly.
So he didn't have anything to do with her murder?
No, he didn't have anything to do with her murder. She committed suicide in the hotel because he had kicked her out.
Right, right.
Like, she came down from New York to model for him. Mm-hmm. Like, she had never modeled before. She was this young, super young kid, like 16, 17 years old. And this was, I mean, effectively, I think it was supposed to be her big break, especially for, like, this super alt brand and stuff like that. And so I think getting kicked out, at that time just kind of left her like hopeless.
Yeah.
And she just, yeah.
Wow.
But that's just speculation. I'm not exactly sure what her motive was, and I don't want to like speak on that as like fact. That's just what I think happened. So Genesis Sanchez said that like you could see a change in like his patterns of anger and like his, you know, I guess like physical altercations and stuff like that. Because like instead of it getting physical, he would just walk away from arguments. Mm-hmm. And he stated that Jocelyn Flores was his guardian angel, and that helped him make better decisions in his relationships. So they let him off of house arrest March 21st, 2018. Shortly after he got off of house arrest, a Snapchat video showed up on social media. And in the video, he was hitting a girl named Brianna Starling. But this was something that had occurred 5 years prior. So in the video, like on the video, it's like caption, "I hate this nigga." So it's like his defense, I guess, like attorneys was trying to say that like they was joking, they was playing around or whatever. And there was like people debating on social media whether or not it was real. So she said that it was a joke, and so did his lawyers. But his manager did want to reach out for her to get like an official statement or something. So his lawyer, Solomon Sobande, reached out to her on Instagram, and she said, "I already know why you're calling. I don't know why everyone is making a big deal out of this video. We were only playing around, and the video was years ago. What the hell is wrong with people?"
Nothing. And they're looking at the pattern of behavior. What do you mean, what's wrong?
But at this time, I'm not sure if her family knew about all the stuff that had happened with Geneva. Mm. So the same number called back later, but it was her grandparents saying that they were upset and, you know, like they wanted to like sue, go to court or whatever about the situation. And so they filed a complaint against Brianna, saying that her family was looking at it as a financial opportunity. And they wanted $300,000 in exchange for her silence, and that they wanted to falsely accuse him of showing like a BB gun to her as like a physical threat. And they thought this would be a good plan, and this is why they switched their tone. Because at first, like, everybody was saying that it was a joke, but like they switched their tone once they found out that he had issues with Geneva. So it's like, oh, okay, we can make this look real because, well, mm-hmm. you know, all the stuff that had already happened or whatever.
Right.
So she later released a statement admitting that they, you know, that it was a joke or whatever, which is like, I don't know, sounds to me like she might have been harassed into saying that, mm-hmm. but that's officially what happened, and they ended up dropping the lawsuit against her. So they also released a secretly recorded audio. I don't know how the fuck Pitchfork is getting all this secretly recorded shit, but it's him at the age of 18 talking to his friends about how he allegedly like beat the shit out of his girlfriend, like word for word, saying, "I already got what I wanted. I already bashed her face on the internet, bro. I done made her look bad on the internet, bro." Later that day, an audio clip popped up on Instagram, and he was saying that he had bashed her face in, and there was no clarification. Even in the full release version that was released later, he said he had no pride looking in the mirror, that he disgusted himself because he knew he had fucked his girlfriend up. And some people argued that when he said fuck her up, like he meant like mentally or whatever, which is still fucking terrible, but
yeah.
So Pitchfork got a lot of backlash because also on the recording, he talked about a lot of the trauma that he had experienced, witnessing someone's tongue being cut out, witnessing someone being raped, and somebody attempting to kill his mom. And so Jonathan Rice, who writes for Rolling Stone, was like, if y'all had given that context, then people would think differently about the situation, basically. The stabbing incident that he mentioned on the video was him acting in self-defense. And the video ended up coming out later that he was defending himself and his friend and his producer. Mm-hmm. So with Pitchfork releasing that audio of him talking about like how he beat his girlfriend's face in and stuff like that, how he had stabbed like 8 niggas and stuff like that, it was like, but if you had talked about the self-defense, if you had talked about the trauma, then people would be able to see, like, a lot of the shit that was, like, really going on with him. So Trippie Redd found out about all of this. Trippie Redd is another like rapper or whatever. He found out about all of this and he ended up cutting X off for a little bit. X stated publicly that, like, I understand why Trippie Redd don't fuck with me no more, basically. He said, you know, not that long ago, I was a piece of shit. I will tell you all personally, I was a piece of shit. Like, I can admit that I'm not a good person. I was not a good person. But I've been trying my best to change myself. So on June 18th, 2018, X goes to Bank of America to take out money before he goes to Riva Motorsports. I'm assuming that he's going to buy like a motorcycle or a boat or something. After withdrawing money, he was followed by a dark Dodge Journey SUV. And in the SUV were Dedrick Williams, Robert Allen, Michael Boatwright, and Trayvon Newsom. So investigators ended up looking at the cameras from like the probation office, and they noticed that like one of the people who was in the car was also in the probation office with them. So they think that that's how they identify him. Like, oh, that's X. That's X. That's Tentacion.
And then followed him.
And then followed him. And then, you know, ended up like deciding that they was going to like rob him or whatever. They also recognized his car the day of the murder. And so that's also how they're talking about like how they, I mean, that's also how they figured they recognized him, is that, okay, so this is the same car outside the probation office. So this must be his at the motorsport place. So at 3:30, when he got to the Reva Motorsports, him and his uncle, Leonard Kerr, went in to, I guess, like shop around and look at motorcycles. They could be seen on camera, like walking past him also, or just like following him, but X didn't even like notice them or acknowledge them. They were recorded coming in there with two black masks on them. And then like their, I guess, like typical clothing or whatever. When he got in his car, a car like drove in front of him and blocked him. And then they hopped out the car and held him at gunpoint, demanding what he had in the car. His uncle took off.
Oh, shit.
His uncle hopped out the car of the passenger side and jetted.
Wow.
But he left the car open. Like, he left the car door open. So they go around the passenger side and they steal his Louis bag. I'm sorry. I don't think it was a Louis bag. Let me not say that. I'm mostly sure, but I'm not completely sure. So let me just say it was a bag with $50,000 cash in it. So the robbery was already over. Like, they already took everything or whatever. They could have just hopped in the car and just dipped. Mm-hmm. But Boatwright stepped back a little bit, held his gun to Jose's face, and looked him dead in the eyes and shot him multiple times.
Whoa.
So Robert Allen, who later ended up telling police what happened, he said that, like, they asked him, like, why did you do that? Like, why did you kill him or whatever? He was like, oh, he tried to grab my gun, which is bullshit because you were feet away from him.
Yeah, you could have just ran away.
Right.
You also had the gun.
Right. You also,
he tried to grab my gun, but you had it in your hands. Right.
He didn't have it.
Just pull it back a little bit.
So paramedics arrive on the scene. They try to revive a pulse, but they couldn't really get it to be, like, consistent. And later on, when he arrives at the hospital, they initially said that he was in critical condition, but then later on that day, they ended up confirming that he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So police put out a $3,000 bounty for any information leading to the arrest of the suspects. And I was like, that's cheap as fuck.
It was like $3,000.
That's not a thing.
Yeah, like, y'all are cheap as fuck. And I don't know. I think it's going to be like, but whatever. So a lot of people initially thought that it was like other Florida rappers, like local rappers, specifically Soulja Kid and Soulja JoJo.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. I'm not a Florida kid.
All these people.
Florida, if you're from Florida, let us know what's up. So he had a private funeral and he also had a public funeral. His private funeral, all of his friends showed up. He had a lot of friends in the industry, Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Yachty, Lil Pump, Denzel Curry, and Erykah Badu.
Wow. Erykah Badu was
very random. Very random.
And she knows about his history.
I was about to say, but no, the more you know about Erykah Badu, the more that actually makes sense.
Because she was taking up for R. Kelly. And he's pulling up on middle schoolers. So, you know.
You're right.
She's a little. Her history is a little dicey. I know. Same. It always be. I just want to like a bitch.
That's all I wanted. Yeah. Do you like her music, though?
Yeah, I used to. I can't listen to it now.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how I feel about Chris Brown. I still love him so much.
He used to be on my wall.
Yes. And now I literally tried to listen to Exclusive because I was like, okay, this is when he was like a literal child. And I just couldn't get into it. I was like, let me just cut this shit off. Like, yeah. I can't do this.
Can't force it.
So he was laid to rest in a mausoleum in Boca Raton Memorial Park. His mausoleum, if you're gonna be dark, if you're gonna do what he wanted his image to be, that looks very much like how XXXTentacion would be buried. So on June 20th, 2018, Broward County arrested 22-year-old Dedrick Williams in connection to the murder. They caught his ass because he had the same shit on Instagram that he had on in the security footage.
Wow.
He had on bright ass orange sandals and he had a like white tank top and then he had on a ski mask. That is how they caught him.
Goofy shit.
Yes. And then I'm guessing he gave up the names of the other people because a week later, Robert Allen was arrested. And then not even a week later, Michael Boatwright was arrested. But he was arrested on drug charges. So I'm not exactly sure if he was named, but yes, he was arrested about a week later. And then they came to him with like the rest of the premeditated first degree murder charges. So later on, maybe like a month later, that's when Trayvon Newsom was arrested on August 7th. So initially when they like searched all their stuff, they searched Boatwright's phone and it said, let me see, what did he search? He had a search for like second degree murder, like accessory to murder in the like.
That's why I'm like, don't anybody ever confiscate our stuff. Our searches are off the chain.
Yes, murderers, yeah. Serial killers,
right?
Torturers, like
out of the body.
Right. How to clean up after a body? Like, I don't want to know shit. Like,
these people are weird.
Yeah. So later on, he ended up saying it's because like he was contacted from prison by the one who had first got arrested, and they were saying that like, oh, you know, you're not gonna get like murder because you're not the one who pulled the trigger or whatever. And boy, was he fucking wrong. on April 6th, they were all charged with premeditated first degree murder and accessory to murder. Robert Allen took a deal. He took a plea deal. And then in exchange for him testifying against the rest of his co-defendants. So April 6, 2023, which was yesterday.
Literally.
All of them were sentenced to, well, I'm sorry. His co-defendants were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Wow.
And then Boatwright received two consecutive terms of life without parole, plus another consecutive 30 years.
So he's not getting out either.
He's not getting out either, yeah. But Robert Allen was the one who took the plea deal.
Okay.
And that was for second degree murder.
Okay.
In exchange for his testimony against the other ones.
I would be so pissed. Like, obviously, them pulling up on X and trying to rob him was wrong. I would be so pissed if the plan was just to do a little grabby snatch.
Yeah. And somebody
now
just
I'm in jail for the rest of my life for murder because you got, like, nigga.
Because you felt big and bad with that gun.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no.
Because I'm already in here for life.
Right.
I'm killing you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never put, I don't know how they do it in Florida because that shit is the Wild Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
But in Georgia, they don't put co-defendants in the same.
They shouldn't. Because, what do I have to lose?
Yeah.
Because we had a plan. Then you started feeling all big and bad with this gun in your hand.
Listen, the worst charge was supposed to be aggravated assault.
That's it.
Burglary with an assault weapon. I don't know. Whatever. It's not murder.
And because of... This is strictly speculation, but because of the person that Jase was... I don't even think he probably would have reported that shit. He probably would have just like, oh, these niggas snatched my bag.
He probably would have got revenge on it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Just like street justice when it came
But to I don't think he would have went to like the police and shit like that. Yeah. No, and so that's what I'm saying. Like, so now the plan went from y'all robbing him and just having beef to like y'all being in prison for the rest of time.
The rest of the daytime.
What the fuck is going on? I would be pissed the fuck off.
Wow.
So yeah, that is the life and subsequent murder of XXXTentacion.
You did that, friend. I want to say I didn't know anything about that man today.
Really?
No.
I knew that he had a strong fan base. Yeah. I knew that there was like some weird stuff. Uh-huh. Like, not great stuff.
He scared me.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to
fart. He looked a little scary, which I'm sorry.
His mugshot does look scary.
And then I know that he got killed. That's really it.
Really?
I don't even know if I know any... What is his most popular song?
I'm going to play Jocelyn Flores for y'all real quick. Because I'm pretty sure... It was on so many TikToks. It was on so... Like, it was super, super...
I feel like even that was before I was really on TikTok.
Because it was on Instagram first. And then when... I guess, like, when TikTok became a thing, people would use it for, like, their, like, sad videos or whatever. And it's just a 2 minute.
Wow. That sounds like Kid Cudi.
Yeah, so that's like his most popular song, and it was because of Jocelyn Flores.
I didn't know.
I'm officially an old ass lady.
Yeah,
I don't know the music anymore.
I think it was just because I was chronically on Spotify when it first jumped off. Like, this was when Spotify was like technically still in like beta.
Yeah,
and so anything that they suggested, any sounds, and especially when Instagram started doing videos and stuff like that, I was like on that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember how people be doing like the sad Bart Simpson videos and shit like that, or it'd be like the little it'd be like,
I feel like you'd be a lot more than both of us.
Lo-fi beats.
Yes, I know that.
Okay, so it's like that. It's like you look up lo-fi beats or you look up chill beats, and it'll be like Bart Simpson just like sitting on a couch, and then they'll play like some sad beats or something like that. And so this is like one of the main ones that that people were playing.
I could see that. Okay. I didn't mind the 2 seconds we heard.
Yeah, he was a good music. And that's the sad part, is like you see a lot of people coming out after this. I remember Jadena did an interview. I'm not exactly sure. I get him and the game mixed up because somebody said they look alike, and I can't get it out of my head. I hate
that. They're so different people.
I know. I hate that so much. But yeah, I think it was Jadena who did an interview, and he was like, yeah, you know, like, his story is so sad, and it's just like, just basically doing that whole thing of like, you know, he was a troubled young kid and he needed help and stuff like that. And I guess, but my irritation with that is like, help black men before they die. Like,
help before they literally torture women.
That's what I'm saying. Yep.
And
like,
abuse them.
When these allegations came out, he should have had a circle of people around him like, no, you need fucking help. Like, you don't need to be doing all that.
Yeah.
And so it just sucks that like all, like Kendrick Lamar and like, all these people go, oh my God, he died. Like, where were y'all? Like, not y'all specifically, like the stars, but also, yes, yeah, like as his circle, as the people who were like his friends who were showing up at his funeral. Where was Erykah Badu? Like, girl,
holding him accountable and getting him the help he needs and all that.
Ain't you supposed to be like a Sage and Crystals kind of bitch? Yeah, like, you could have you know what I mean? Like, there's never any like material effect to like all these people being friends with people, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah.
Well, that was extremely informative. Wow.
Yeah.
He was not a great person.
Yeah. I honestly don't even think he ever had a chance.
No, it doesn't. His childhood was terrible.
Yeah, and then he grew up with mental health issues, mm-hmm. and then just grew up to be extremely abusive.
Yeah.
And would just throw money at the situation. I don't think, I mean, of course, his fame didn't help, but like him having money just made it fucking worse.
And then to die on some stupid shit.
Yeah. Like, to get robbed for $50,000. His life was worth way more than fucking $50,000.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, that's it. Oh yeah, I meant to say, another pop culture tidbit before we move on. The reason why I said Louis bag is because there's a Drake line where he said, I got, like, I'm fucking up this lyric, but it's to the effect of, like, I got some niggas down in something who will do it for a Louis bag or something like that. And that's the bag that was taken from X. And him and Drake was beefing, because, you know, Drake be stealing people flow and shit.
Yes.
So
Drake be stealing people everything.
And cultures, accents, everything.
All the things.
BBLs.
All right. Stealing people's abs. And so, at some point, I think he said, like, if I ever die, like, it's Drake who did it, or something like that.
Oh.
And then, like, it was just it's a whole bunch of different, like, weird connections between him and Drake. And so when it happened, it was like, oh, yeah, Drake did it. To this day, a lot of people still think that, like, it was Drake who got him killed.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, also, Drake was much older than him. Like, nigga, get some business.
Yeah, Drake is older than us, right?
Drake's
like
almost
40.
Yeah,
yeah.
He grown. He shouldn't even know who X is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but that's what the talent is. You still from
that's true.
Yeah,
true.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. Well, hopefully, should this be a comedy a little bit later? Should this be a comedy? The point is mine.
I love your little, like, add-ons. It's so cute.
So if you couldn't guess from our special edition of the opening song, this Should This Be a Crime is about Monica and Brandy. So Ray J...
Yes, it is 2024.
Yes. Ray J, in an effort to remain relevant, as he tends to do, is putting his foot in his mouth, per usual. He's on The Breakfast Club, which is already a terrible place to be with terrible people. And they were discussing, I guess, an idea for a tour. And he was saying that he feels like Monica and Brandy should go on tour together and co-headline. And then he was talking with them about, like, who should come out first. And he said it should be Monica. There was some back and forth about it, whether or not they should go song for song, like a versus, or, you know, whatever. But basically just putting out this idea that they should do a tour together. So Monica posts a clip of it on her Instagram story. And then next says, I've been repeatedly contacted about interviews, etc., where my name and tour possibilities are being discussed. I've not received any contracts or calls about said tour! Exclamation point. At Ray J, I'm kindly asking you to stop speaking on me in public! Exclamation point. I feel like the exclamation points are important.
Yes.
A private conversation will be both necessary and respectful! Exclamation point. Brandy is a legend! All caps! Exclamation point. She's one of the ones with an extensive catalog that I deeply respect and a voice sent from heaven. The conversation being had without she and I is beginning to muddy the water severely. She and I are both consummate professionals that share a massive recording as well as an entire era. Please allow us to remain positive and beautiful. Neither should open. We should both give someone else that opportunity and co-headline a massive shared stage if this ever was to happen. Exclamation point. Any further combo should be private. Exclamation point. Then she also posted, I get it, I will forever be the quote-unquote bad guy in this situation, and no one will ever pay attention or read, listen to understand. I have no issues with anyone, but it's not real unless there's a deal. There's no 100 mil, no contract, media outlets come for comments about an imaginary tour, and this unfairly spikes the excitement of our supporters and the insinuation that the holdup of said imaginary deal taking place is me. The Breakfast Club interview is the first I've acknowledged of the antics. We both deserve the respect of real business being done.
That was a good response.
That was a really good response.
She ate him up bad.
She did. Yeah.
Maturely.
Mm-hmm.
And everything she said makes sense. I mean, yeah, if they were going to go on tour together, Ray J, your ass should open.
Right. And that's it.
Yeah. And then they can just go back and forth, do a couple songs each, and I will be set.
Yeah.
I'll be attending. Just go back and forth and then come together at the end. And that I would enjoy that very much.
Yeah.
Also, Monica is like an ATL legend. Don't fucking do her. Like, that's
right. The opener.
Like, the literal character of Nunu is, like, loosely based off of her life. Like,
I did not know that.
So she, because it's, I don't know if the rich part is based off her, but, like, her wanting to be with the boys and, like, wanting to skate with them and, like, that whole thing is, like, based off of her, basically.
I love Nunu because her real name is Erin and she went to Spelman. And
I said that. I didn't want to bring it up.
Nancy was playing hood for a friend.
I love
that movie.
But yeah, so like, don't do Monica like that. Like, yes, Brandy has an extensive catalog. We know she's the vocal Bible, but also Monica is like a legend in her own right. Like, don't Not too much.
Right.
And you a nigga too. Like, that's so messy.
It is messy. But Ray J is messy.
Ray J is a very messy man.
And I think what she said definitely hit the nail on the head. Like, there's not a deal. You got people calling my phone, asking me questions. And now, because you are literally Brandy's brother, it looks like y'all didn't have this conversation and I'm the holdup. Like, I'm just like, nah, fuck Brandy. Like, they done made up and everything. And it, like, adds to that, you know, just the supposed beef, the beef they actually had, not because she slapped the shit out of her.
But
it just adds to that when they've like matured and come together, they've worked together, and but it still like puts Monica in this position of looking like a bully or a bad guy.
And she went to shits, like,
because Monica ain't for no reason.
Wasn't she posting chocolates like not even a couple years ago? I can't remember. She literally was like squatting with two chocolates like this. Her baby daddy is Rocco, like, be for real. Like, I'm just not playing with
him. It's clearly another case of Ray J just trying to stay relevant, just like what I said before, and he just saying anything. And if he wasn't Brandy's sister, he wouldn't, I mean, y'all know. He just thinks that he has some type of authority on that, and he doesn't. And, but unfortunately, the public thinks he does, because like Monica said, now people are going to be expecting something that literally doesn't exist, and that's a lot of pressure for an artist. I mean, I wouldn't mind it, so
I'm very excited. I would be posted,
but
especially he could have sent a text though.
No, 100%. Like, let's be professional. That musicians talk to each other behind the scenes all the fucking time.
Right.
Even if they have beef in public. Yeah. Like, it's not. But he was trying to be messy.
Yeah.
You don't go to Breakfast Club unless you are.
Yeah, true. Because it's not like, I feel like at one point, there was like a nice little golden era of Breakfast Club where people would go to like set the record straight.
Yeah.
Like when Keke Palmer got on there and she was talking about Trey Songz and stuff like that. Like, I feel like that was kind of like I feel like Lil Nas X was like the last interview where it was just like, I'm coming over here to tell y'all who I am or what I'm about or something like that. Everything after that has just been like, it's like y'all are bullying folks and y'all want to get that viral clip so bad that y'all are willing to like say some fuck shit.
Do you think it's fair to say that after Angela Yee left, that's where all of the quote unquote journalistic integrity left, and then with Just Hilarious amped up that like we're just trying to be antagonistic?
I think so. I think that even when Angela Yee there, she let a lot of shit slide that she shouldn't have. She did do her shit. Like even when Birdman and them stepped out the studio, which is fucking iconic.
I know.
All three of y'all, you know what I mean? She was like, damn, like I had all my notes. Like, she really did research on folks and was like asking them questions and shit like that. So I feel like Just Hilarious being terrible fucking
person. Absolutely not hilarious in any way.
Not hilarious.
Ain't shit funny.
Transphobic as fuck. Yeah. Like, anger and
Islamophobic. She's a bunch of phobic.
All types of phobic.
That's a bitch.
So I know it always be the strong chin bitches that be the most fucking transphobic. Like, have you noticed that? It always be the bitches who people get, like, who people accuse of being trans, who like turn these.
I mean, I think there's definitely a correlation there because they're impacted by like
trans misogyny, like adjacent to it,
and so they're trying to distance themselves from trans people.
No, you need to distance yourself from these niggas who are trying to clock you as a trans, trying to press that type of violence on you, girl. The fuck. But anyway, that's a whole other shit to be a crime. Is it a crime to be Just Hilarious?
Absolutely. Is it a crime for the Breakfast Club to exist?
Yes.
Yeah. Ray J is just a child, and he will never grow up.
He is very childish.
Even though, what is he, almost 50? How old is that man?
He gotta be at least 45. 40.
He's something.
Wait, I've heard that video. This is my favorite Ray J moment. I'm so sorry. Also, his dating record, I'm
it's
not gonna hold
wild.
No, it's so random.
But that video where he was promoting his glasses, and he was like, they were indestructible.
Yeah.
He's like 43.
He broke him immediately.
He's like, yeah, go ahead, try.
Okay. I was literally gonna say the same thing. I was like, that's my favorite.
That's my favorite moment.
Oh my god, he's so fucking random.
He is so random.
Even when he was trying to come up with the Scooty Bikes, what is that?
Right.
What is a Scooty Bike?
Ray J. What is it called? The little AirPods?
Yeah, Ray J. Raybuds or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He always got a hustle.
He's always on some show.
He is funny. I just wish he would just
He just need to stop.
Tighten up a little bit. Yeah. Don't be pushing women in pools. Like, come on, bro. That's too much.
Your woman. The mother of your children.
Divorce.
But did y'all know that she like is like a poker professional now. Like, she makes millions playing poker. That's so like, what is going on?
Very random.
It's so random.
Yeah, it's so random. But yeah, no, yeah, okay, so is it a crime to be the Breakfast Club or to be just hilarious? Absolutely. Mm-hmm, yes. Charlamagne, I feel like they should have ended the Breakfast Club after when Angelique left. Yeah. She was saying, yeah, like, oh, this is the end of Breakfast Club as you know it, and mm-hmm, stuff like that. I feel like they should have just rebranded and did something else.
Yeah.
The cool kids. I don't fucking know. Yeah. Back of us. Because that's what it's giving. Like, niggas just be roasting people off the If y'all gonna be mean niggas, just be mean niggas. But yeah, don't try to, like, make it sound like some sort of journalistic integrity.
Right.
Also, Charlamagne's, like, 60 years old. Like, girl.
It's, I'm so sick of that man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was Wendy Williams' protege. And, you know, protege is always worse than the...
Yeah.
The mentee,
oh,
the
we should have talked about Wendy Williams.
Next time.
Not mm-hmm, her, but the documentary.
Yeah, no.
I mean, they go together, but...
Definitely.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah. All right. Well,
definitely crimes.
Yeah, all of it's a crime. Except for Monica, that's my bitch.
Yeah,
I fuck with her.
So. And also, if you happen to be listening to this, we will attend this concert.
So. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So this might be the catalyst to make.
Yeah, don't make her make an Instagram caption about us.
We love you, and if you don't do it, that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Just leave it like. I love you too. I'm from LA too.
Please. Well, let us know what you think. As always, you
can
find
watch
us online. Oh yeah, we on TV.
Okay, you can find us online at Ayana Killa Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Ayana Killa Pod on Twitter and on Tubi.
Yeah,
it's fucking weird.
Oh my god, that's a weird saying. And you can listen to us on Apple Music. You can listen to us on Spotify. Anywhere where you get your podcast, you will find us. And now TV too. Y'all faces. Y'all please allow me.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.